Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is George Lakoff, a professor of cognitive science and linguistics at the University of California at Berkeley, where he has taught since 1972. He is the author of Don't Think of an Elephant and The Little Blue Book, The Essential Guide of Thinking and Talking Democratic, co-written with Elizabeth Veeling. He has an article at the Huffington Post, The State of the Union 2014, The Cognitive Power of the President. Welcome to Background Briefing, George Lakoff.
Always a pleasure to talk to you.
And, George, there's rumors that the president's going to come out swinging on Tuesday night, that he's going to threaten to bypass Congress and show a more assertive style or side of him, perhaps. A lot of people, of course, think it's somewhat overdue. He has been treated, I think, with the most hideous and often racist disrespect that I don't think most modern presidents have had to put up with. How would it play if he came out and basically told those people that there's a new sheriff in town?
It'd play very, very well. People want to see a powerful president.
Do you think they will on Tuesday night?
I don't know if they will. I hope so. I think it would be the smartest thing for him to do. It is always better to go on offense than defense, especially if you're president.
So what has inhibited him in the past? One of the theories I have heard is that he doesn't want to come across as an angry black man. That will just feed the Fox News and the Rush Limbaugh machine.
Well, people have been saying that for the last 5 years, and that may be in part true. I think rather he has, from the beginning, seen himself as the president of all the people, and he doesn't want to come across as the president of some of the people. But, you know, at this point, in order to be president of all the people, he's got to come out swinging.
So in terms of your article at the Huffington Post, George Lakoff, State of the Union 2014, The Cognitive Power of the President, your caveat is, of course, you're saying that this is what you'd like him to say, but what you don't expect him to say. But since Jay Carney and the White House have already leaked the suggestion that the president might bypass Congress and try and deliver directly to the American people, and the president himself says, we're not just going to be waiting for legislation in order to make sure that we're providing for Americans the kind of help they need. I've got a pen and I've got a phone. So if he's going to go the executive route by issuing executive orders, you've listed some pretty good ones here. Let's start with the first one that you've suggested here is he could issue an executive order for the government to grant contracts only to companies that pay their workers above the minimum wage, with a higher minimum wage. A good place to start.
Excellent place to start. And what it would mean, essentially, is raising the minimum wage because a lot of companies compete for contracts even if they lose. So they would have to raise the minimum wage even if they didn't get the contracts. And, you know, that would spread. So basically, he can effectively, for much of the country, raise the minimum wage with a stroke of the pen. And, you know, by the way, this isn't an original idea. This idea has been floating around for some time, both for cases of the minimum wage and for many other things. After all, he is commander-in-chief of the military. He could, you know, say all sorts of things that people in the military would have to do as commander-in-chief. So there are, and the military extends all over the country to military bases, to veterans' hospitals, and so on. He has all sorts of powers over, you know, vast reaches of the country.
So explain, if you will, your thesis, though, underlying your article at the Huffington Post, George Lakoff, that beyond material power, the president has even greater power, cognitive power.
Well, the president can introduce ideas into public discourse. And I've written for many years about how conservative presidents did that. You know, George Bush, from the first day in office, started talking about tax relief, assuming that taxes were an affliction, that if you wanted to keep or raise taxes, you were just hurting people more and so on. And this was part of an overall conservative view, not just of taxation, but of the entire economic program of conservatism. That is, you know, and this idea, you know, kept being put out there and putting out there until even Democrats started talking about middle-class tax relief and so on. Tax relief is an idea. It's not just language. It's an idea, and it's an idea that depends on other ideas, namely relief is relief of an affliction. And if you're relieving it, you're a hero. And if you're not, you're a villain. And then taxation is an affliction. And that only makes sense if you're not thinking of the government as using taxes to provide, you know, resources, public resources for everybody that everybody needs, especially businesses. So this is, you know, a very important idea that Bush got out there right away. And this is something that Obama could get out there that has to do with, you know, the Democrats not saying things. The Republicans have calculated on getting their ideas out there for many, many years, starting with Reagan saying government is the problem and many other things of that sort. And now there is a chance to actually tell truths. But to tell truths, you have to use language that isn't out there now. And it won't be familiar necessarily. What that means is you've got to say, use language that people will get immediately, but that will have to be repeated over and over so that the idea expressed by the language will be parts of people's brains. And that's how things change in a country. That is, when you hear ideas that express, language that expresses an idea, and you hear it over and over, your brain changes. You get that idea, whether you agree with it or not, it becomes part of your brain. You may disagree with it, but you're still thinking it, and it becomes part of public discourse, and the language for it becomes part of public discourse. And once it's part of public discourse, and once the idea is out there, you can think about and talk about the consequences of that idea and how to make that idea real. So that actually is an enormous power that the president has, and there are hundreds of things that he could change that way.
Again, I'm speaking with George Lakoff, who's a professor of cognitive science and linguistics at the University of California at Berkeley, where he has taught since 1972. He's the author of Don't Think of an Elephant and The Little Blue Book, The Essential Guide to Thinking and Talking Democratic, co-written with Elizabeth Vailing. He has an article at the Huffington Post, State of the Union 2014, The Cognitive Power of the President. So, I mean, clearly, you know, for all of the propaganda that the Republicans have successfully launched in the last few decades, starting with Ronald Reagan, against government, where government is the problem, as you pointed out. You know, one wonders why the Democrats didn't turn around and say, you know, we're not, it's not a question of big government, it's a question of better government. So what is their deficit? I know you've argued about it and pointed out the deficits in framing and semantics on the Democratic side in this.
Before I go into that, and I do want to go into it, let me give you examples of the kind of ideas that need to get out there. You know, let's start with, a very, very simple one. Pensions. What are pensions? Pensions are delayed payments for work already done. Right? Mm-hmm. That's what pensions are.
Right. They're not something that's not in the freeloader category, as we've seen.
They're not gifts. They're not payments for not working. They are delayed payments for work already done. And these were, you know, offered by companies as benefits for the company, actually. Because if you take part of someone's salary and you say, okay, I'll invest that money for you and pay you the rest of this salary 30 years from now, then I can invest it, take the increase in value from the investments and pay you 30 years from now. Now, that's a way that the companies can do well if they invest the money well, and that the workers can do well, and have retirement income. That's an extremely important part of our legacy. So what has happened, however, is that both companies and municipalities and states have taken that money and spent it on something else. and they've acted as if they were gifts. And they use the word benefits. Benefits suggest that these are gifts. And then they say, well, we can't afford these benefits anymore, you know. Well, what do you mean you can't afford it? They were earned. They're part of salaries. You have a contract, you know, to pay those salaries. You know, you're supposed to check up on them. And there should be transparency about all pension funds. You know, they should be checked up on every year to make sure they're still there, that they haven't been put someplace else. This is a very big deal.
So obligation and instead of benefit then. Is that would obligation be the right word?
It's not just obligation. It's earnings.
Mm-hmm.
It's delayed earnings.
Okay.
You know, earnings to be paid later. I mean, it's very, very straightforward. These are earned.
Right.
They're salaries. You know, and you say it out loud, and you have to repeat it over and over. And places that you know, governors who want to cut, you know, pensions, or mayors who want to cut pensions, are simply stealing. And you have to say, they're stealing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
There are things like that all over the place. For example, workers are profit creators. You know, they say, you know, okay, owners of factories are job creators, but workers create profits. And then there's a certain thing called productivity, which is the amount of profit per worker. Well, when productivity goes up, that's because the productivity of the workers has gone up. They've earned it. But their salaries have been pretty much flat relative to inflation for 30 years, right? Productivity has gone way up, and the workers who have created those profits haven't gotten a share of them. They deserve them. That is what all of the arguments about fair wages is about. I mean, that's crucial everywhere. And it's not just about minimum wages. It's about fair wages. It's about living wages. Right? And to make that case, you have to have the idea that workers are profit creators. Without that idea, the whole argument goes. It has to be repeated over and over again.
And in terms of your suggestion, George Lakoff, that the president take on the issue of our climate crisis, he hasn't exactly been robust in taking on nuclear and coal and natural gas. In fact, much of the policies that have come forth lately have been to celebrate natural gas. And my understanding is from the fracking mania that's going on now, a lot of natural gas, the methane seeps out, and it's about 100 times worse as an aggressive greenhouse gas. So whatever gains you get from burning natural gas are offset by the leakage. And yet that's not even factoring in that in every home in the country that has gas, there's usually leakage somewhere in the grid, and that's all methane again. So this really isn't a national inventory on how much the natural gas business is causing us more problems than solving global warming. So you're suggesting in your article at the Huffington Post that he should talk about immoral fuels.
Absolutely. Look, natural gas is a fossil fuel just like coal and oil. And it does have a huge leakage problem, which may make it just as bad as coal and oil. And that's something that needs to be said out loud. Now, on the case of coal, coal is going down anyway. But people are trying to still blow up mountaintops and ship coal to the third world, thus, burning coal somewhere else and putting it into our atmosphere just as badly as if it were burned here. So that's not exactly wonderful. He should take it on, and he should let people know that people generally don't know just how bad these things are and how bad the climate crisis is. You know, we know in California we've got a drought. We know that, there are hurricanes, that are caused by global warming, systemically caused by global warming, in the East Coast and other floods in the Midwest and so on. We have huge climate crises, which are extremely costly. but, you know, not just in dollars, $60 billion for Hurricane Sandy, but costly in terms of life and property and enjoyment of life and so on. And they're going to go on and get worse. This has got to stop. And not only that, they cause terrible things internationally. They extend deserts. One of the reasons for the war in Syria has been drought in northern Syria that caused huge migration in Syria and that led to all sorts of conflicts in Syria that sparked a lot of what was going on in Syria. I mean, this is not something to be taken lightly. A study by the Defense Department said that the most serious worry that the Defense Department has about the future is future wars developing out of global warming disasters. This is something that needs to be said and said out loud. And something more, people think of it in terms of the word environment, as if the environment was out there somewhere, like, you know, over in Alaska where there are polar bears, you know. Nature is inside of us. You know, we breathe air, we breathe the pollution, we drink water, we drink the pollution, eat food, we eat the pesticides. I mean, they come inside of us, in our bodies. You know, if you're in a drought or a flood, you are physically affected, and it's going to affect your children, your grandchildren, and so on, all the worse. So, I mean, these are things that have to be said out loud and repeated over and over. And the idea that that what is called the environment, that nature is at stake, we're destroying nature. And in that destruction of nature, you know, we're destroying species of fish, with bees that are absolutely necessary for pollinating all of our fruits and vegetables. We are destroying bees. You know, but not just bees. If you look at the tar sands oil in Canada, where is it being dug up? It's being dug up by the destruction of one of the world's largest arboreal forests, which is the home of a huge percentage of the songbirds in the whole world, of the migrating songbirds. They're killing off large percentages of the world's songbirds. You know, songbirds are part of our world, and they're part of who we are.
Well, George Lakoff, just in the last minute then, I would think that when you just mentioned what we put into our bodies and the pollution in the environment, that there was nothing more striking than what happened recently in West Virginia, where people couldn't drink water because of the chemical spill, and it really made you realize how basic clean drinking water is. That's in the zeitgeist. Don't you think the president should jump on that?
It's in my paper, exactly. The president should jump on that. He should jump on the Arkansas case, you know, where there was a pipeline spill that basically destroyed a town, and that luckily the town was just on the other side of the Mississippi. It could have destroyed, you know, huge amounts of, you know, or polluted huge amounts of this country had it occurred a couple of miles away. These are some things to be brought up and discussed very seriously. The president should, with a stroke of the pen, say, sorry, no XL pipeline. And the arguments for it are easy. They say, oh, we need the pipeline because it is safe, which it isn't. You know, the initial use of pipelines in near Canada, the first 11 months they used the pipeline, they had basically a leak every month. I mean, this is very serious stuff there. The pipelines are not safe. They're under enormous pressure and heat, and they carry 800,000 gallons a day of the dirtiest oil on Earth. I mean, this is you know, laced with poisons in order to make it flow at all. I mean, this is serious. Most people don't know anything about this, and the president needs to, you know, say, no, no XL pipeline. Now, the argument that, instead, people just use railroads. Well, we've had railroad explosions and leaks recently, and they should be outlawed because the oil is being transported on the railroads in unsafe old tank cars, you know, and the oil companies can't afford to buy new ones. So they couldn't transport the oil if they did it safely. We should bring down regulations on the safety of oil transportation immediately, right? And then the other argument is, well, the Canadians will just build a pipeline to the Pacific and send it to Asia. Well, they'll send it to Asia anyway, but the point is they're not going to build that pipeline. Why? Because it goes through Native American territory, and it goes over the Rockies. It's both expensive and horrendous to even try to build, and it's not going to be allowed. So in short, you know, the XL pipeline is a major big deal. And the president could come out fighting right away and say, no, right here, I'm president. This is the end. We have to stop global warming.
Well, George Lakoff, I thank you very much for joining us. Obviously, we have our fingers crossed here that the president will come out fighting and will lay down some markers here. And I'll be anxious to see whether he picks up on your ideas.
Well, I don't expect him to, as I said. I think he'll do some of it here and there. I think he'll do more than he did before. But I think he's been pretty cautious. And I think he's going to take cautious first steps in executive orders. But, you know, he could, you know, write 100 executive orders, you know, in a week, so many that the conservatives couldn't even follow them.
Well, again, I thank you for joining us, George Lakoff.
Okay. A pleasure, Ian. Take care.
You too. Again, I've been speaking with George Lakoff. He's a professor of cognitive science and linguistics at the University of California, Berkeley, where he has taught since 1972. He's the author of Don't Think of an Elephant and The Little Blue Book, The Essential Guide to Thinking and Talking Democratic, co-written with Elizabeth Veeling. He has an article at the Huffington Post, State of the Union 2014, The Cognitive Power of the President. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon and assistant producer David Rushert. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. You can also contact me, and I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now. Took the kids to the park and disappeared.